From the University of Illinois Farm Tax School in East Peoria, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. Drew Lerner will be here to go through the weather forecast. Gary Schnitke has a look at the margin protection insurance you've been hearing so much about and that you have until the end of this month to make a decision on. And we'll discuss what's been happening here at the tax school as well on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason here in East Peoria at the UofI Farm Tax School. More from that a bit later, but now let's turn our attention to the commodity markets. Jackie Vakes joins us from Stuart Peterson. Jackie, thanks for being with us. How are you today?
Well, I'm good. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing very, very well. So let's jump right into this. Let's start with Brazil. You've been thinking about Brazil and some of the things that are happening there.
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, this is certainly the time of year. We think about them all the time, but as they start to plant the new crop down there, there's more focus. Let's just put it that way. You know, they're drier than normal in southern Brazil. Farmers are, the no-plant season is over. And unfortunately, the temperatures have turned hot. They're 90 to 100 degrees. The excess moisture that they had back in August is pretty much gone. So they're going to wait for 2 to 3 inches of rain probably before they plant. Now, they haven't planted anything so far. And the key is Mato Grosso has to be planted by December 31st, primarily because they want to prevent the spread of rust. And, you know, they don't allow double crop beans anymore. So it's one of those situations where they're hoping for rain. Let's just put it that way. We know what that's like here. We go through that all the time. But their bean acreage is interesting because the bean acreage will likely be up in Brazil this year. In August of 2016, bean prices in Brazil were $10. In 17, they're $8.35. But they're still more profitable than corn is. So it's a situation where the likelihood is that we're going to see, less corn acres, more bean acres. And the corn acreage, here I've got some information, Todd, on corn acreage. Basically, last year it was 513 is where corn was in August of 16. August of 17, $2.63, down 49%. That hits hard. There's no question. As we go through, one of the things that they opened for the very first time was their full-size ethanol plant in Mato Grosso. And, there was just so much excitement about it. The president of Brazil just came to christen it. Can you imagine? He must have taken a day off from working with all of his fraud stuff to be able to do that. But he came up, and they're excited. I mean, the Mato Grosso, I didn't realize this, is the largest corn-producing state in Brazil. But they only use about 15% of it domestically. So the farmers are excited. You know, they feel like it's going to add value. It's going to reduce transportation costs. You know, transportation costs right now run about $2 a bushel. Benefit the local economy because it'll keep more money locally. They figure it'll create jobs. For a full-size plant, they'll have about 87 full-time people and 2,000 indirect jobs, truckers and everything else. And they're really on board with improving the environment down in Brazil. They have a lot of smog problems and things like that in the major cities. So even though when Jeff and I were down there in 06, they were using biodiesel as well as ethanol, but you could have a bus come up to a corner. You wouldn't even know that there was a bus there. You would never smell it because they use biodiesel. It was pretty amazing to me at that point in time. So there's a lot of things going on down there.
And then Argentina, and we'll come back to the United States here in just a moment, too.
Well, when I look at Argentina and talking about their planting, they're really the opposite of Brazil. They've just been drenched with rain. 98% of their corn crop is harvested at this point in time. And, what they're really going to plant is going to come down to when the heavy rains end and they can actually get in the fields. There's a lot of things that are going on down there. We talked about last week, with the export tax on beans, and if they do start to do any interrupting with the corn export market, that too will have an impact on what they plant. But at this point in time, we really don't have a good idea.
And then speaking of rainfall, I want you to go back to last week and this time take up the USDA's report, because they made a note in that, and I saw this note. I wondered what you were thinking about the southern states and the impact of Irma and what it might have. And I take it they're probably in the midst, maybe now, of doing some recalculations there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I read that also, and it's one of the things that when you go back, what I did was I looked at how many acres or how many bushels they produce. They're going to be reviewing harvested acres in Florida, Alabama, Georgians. Excuse me, corn acres are going to, they're actually going to do in Texas, Louisiana, bean acres in Florida, Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. Now, in those four states, they produce 100 million bushels, and they were thought to be about 65% harvested, which means that leaves about 35 million bushels at risk. A big number, but not a huge number. Louisiana and Texas produce 414 million bushels of corn, but they're 67% harvested, so that would leave about 137 million bushels at risk. And I don't believe that they lost everything. So we'll probably lose a part of that when they go back and resurvey. But, you know, I wanted to kind of put a pencil and put a number to it. So, you know, if you look at the total on that, 35 million on beans, not big, not little. 137 million on corn. In light of where we're at on the carryout, I don't think it's a big deal in a lot of ways. I don't think it's going to do to the report what people might hope it would.
There's been a lot of discussion about the export market for U.S. products. How do you see
it? Well, I looked at expectations for tomorrow and got really good expectations, 700 to a million metric tons of corn, 1.2 to 1.5 million metric tons of beans, 3 to 5 million metric tons of wheat. You know, those are really strong expectation numbers and very similar to last week's report. Now, the bean number doesn't surprise me at all because we sold more beans today, which is a part of the reason that the market was higher. Between China, unknown, and Mexico, they've ordered 72.5 million bushels of beans for 17-18 delivery and 4.4 million bushels of beans for 18-19 delivery in the last 8 business days.
It's always good to talk with you, Jackie. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Jackie Fakes is with Stuart Peterson. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, I'm sure that you've heard by now about the margin protection program offered through crop insurance by the United States Department of Agriculture, and have been wondering just exactly what it might be. Gary Schnittke is here. He's the crop insurance specialist at the U of I. Hey, Gary, thanks for being with us. First, what exactly is this program? And I take it that it's a fall purchase program.
Yep. So margin protection has a deadline of September 30th for sign up. It's new this year in Illinois, so corn and soybeans. And what it does is it offers protection on the margin at a county level. So you can think about this as like a ARP product with a margin on top of the revenue that's protections that's offered. So it is expected revenue and expected cost.
What does the margin represent?
So it presumably represents a profit from farming, so expected revenue minus cost. And the costs that are included in this product are urea, DAP, potash, interest cost, and diesel fuel cost. Plus, there's $206 of additional cost included in there as well. But it's what the margin will do is vary over time depending on what futures contracts do on urea, DAP, diesel fuel, and interest rates.
Well, so it's actually tied to futures contracts and trade over a year, over a nine-month period.
So what it does is there's this projected period, just like there is for all crop insurance products. That has just come to an end. It's from August 15th to September 14th. So there's a expected urea price. There's an expected potash or DAP price and an expected diesel fuel price and an expected interest rate. They'll do that again in April. So the April, they'll calculate the settlement prices, and if they go up, margins would go down, and if those prices go down, margins would go up. So downward movement in prices would make margin protection harder to make payments on.
Offhand, what was the price of urea?
So urea prices for this year would be $204 per ton. So if we have a higher urea price in April, the margin would go down, and that would be more likely to trigger a payment. Over time, I would not expect much movements in the margin cost, you know, $20, $30, but there will be that odd year in which urea prices would spike or DAP prices would spike or otherwise.
Any reason particularly that I should be interested in this?
So I would not purchase this product for the cost side of it. The other side of it, that you might be interested in is setting a projected price now versus in February. So we know that our projected prices for margin insurance are $3.96 for corn and $9.66 for soybeans. So we do know those now. So if you wanted to set those now, you could use margin protection. You could also go up to a 95% coverage level. So that would be an advantage. So ARP users could use this, or could use margin protection instead of ARP, and they would have to sign up by September 30th for the margin protection insurance.
And I take it if you're an RP user, which would involve almost the whole of everybody else, you could double it up?
So if you're an RP user, and let's say you're 85% RP user, you could add margin protection on top of your RP product. So you could get margin protection at a 95% level and RP at 85%. If you do that, any payments that you get from your RP product will reduce your margin protection products. So you won't get double payments, but you could get payments in that, you know, 85 to 95% range, based on county yields, not farm yields. Again, it's all based on county yields and what's happening off the farm. But some people might find that attractive. It's going to cost something over $20 an acre to add something like that to the policy. And I would not suggest doing away with the RP policy.
It's the harvest season. I've got 15 days less than that now to put this together. How much paperwork is involved? It sounds a bit confusing. So the question is, almost on a new model year, do I want to wait and see? And because of the time of year, it's just really busy.
So margin, I don't see a lot of compelling reason for ARP users to switch to margin protection. And I would guess that the take of margin protection under RP users will be very small. So waiting a year, you know, probably if you're in a hurry, this not a bad thing either.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Well, we're here in East Peoria at one of the University of Illinois' farm tax schools, an event that they have fairly often. This one is a seminar that's in particular related to the business and complexity of farm taxes. Bob Ray is here. He's with FBFM and manages to put some taxes together for farmers over the years. I was listening this morning and found something of great interest that I think the audience, both farmers and business owners, will find of interest, because I believe it probably is applicable to both, especially when they get to retirement age. That if they retire, and in the case of a farmer, they sell the business, they sell probably not the property, but they sell farm machinery, that a couple of years later, that income will come back to them, even if they find a way through the tax system not to have an impact or as much of an impact that year of the sale. It will come back to them if they are in the government health insurance programs for the retired folks.
That's right, Todd. It's sort of a hidden or almost a phantom additional cost that exists on liquidating a business. And you're right, it's a farm and a non-farm issue both. For people who are drawing Medicare and paying Medicare premiums, the IRS has a rule that says if you have a large income in 1 year, we wait 2 years and then look back and determine if you need to pay a higher Medicare premium because you had high income in that 2 years prior.
So for business owners, go through the calculations for me of some kind of sample.
Sure, and it's a scale. So normally a business owner or any person that's paying Medicare premiums today would pay around $150 a month for a Medicare Part B and a typical Medicare Part D drug prescription plan. And that turns into $1,800 a year, or for a couple, about $3,600 a year. The rule then says 2 years hence, we look back, and if you had a high income in that second prior year, they will increase the amount of your Medicare premiums on a scale based on how much income, additional income you have in that second prior year.
So how do you get around it, or is there a way to get around it?
We don't think there's a very good way around that. We've tried, you know, writing letters and saying these were unusual or one-time events, but typically the rule is the rule. They look back 2 years, if you had a high income, they will increase your premiums. And if it can increase to the highest level, so that a married couple taking Medicare Part D and Part B premiums could be paying as much as $12,000 a year instead of the more normal $3,600 a year. And we don't find that out until 2 years later, so it's something important to keep in mind in our planning for large incomes at the time of retirement.
So there are some ways, and you asked the audience here at the Farm Tax School in East Peoria to work maybe with the Social Security folks to make sure that that doesn't show up, but not very many people are successful at this apparently.
Correct. I mean, and today was the first time I'd heard of anyone who'd had success in sort of appealing that new calculation. When you get the notice that would come to folks in November, December of the year before those higher rates take effect, it lays out some steps you can do through an appeal. But my experience and most of our attendees' experience was those were not very successful. There was a little glimmer of hope where we had three people who had submitted those types of appeals and had won in very unique circumstances. But generally, it's difficult to find a way to beat that higher Medicare premium that gets asserted 2 years from the time of the higher income.
And I use this as an example of a farm auction, or maybe they sold the business, but it would be on any large income year?
Any income that's on your individual tax return would trigger this higher premium. A machinery sale, an inventory sale of equipment, a farmland sale, taking a lump sum out of a retirement plan for a non-farm person, receiving deferred compensation for people who have those options. Anything that boosts your 1040 page one answer has the risk of increasing your Medicare premiums 2 years later.
So the important part really is that they know that 2 years later that they may have a large Medicare premium that there is due, and they need to plan for it.
Correct. We always get caught up in, well, what's the tax impact of my 2017 transaction? And we can fairly determine what that might be. Our point today was, remember, there's also an impact on your 2019 Medicare premium. Just acknowledge, be aware of that, be ready for that, and know that there's a slim chance of defeating that. But the more important part is, there's another tax coming 2 years from now.
Thanks so much, Bob. Bob Ray, of course, is with the Farm Business Farm Management folks, or FBFM. He's also here at the University of Illinois Tax School. Farm taxes and complexity in business at East Peoria. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm at the U of I's Tax School in East Peoria today. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's not a bad day for, September? It seems like July.
Yeah, well, August seemed like September and October, so I suppose September feeling a bit like August, at least in the eastern Corn Belt, is a bit of a switcheroo. In fact, can you make your way from the east side of the Corn Belt to the west side of the Corn Belt and tell me about conditions?
Yeah, you know, all of this hurricane business that we're dealing with, Jose right now off the New England coast, and Maria, which is going to be coming up off the same region, off the eastern U.S. coast as we get into next week. And between the two of them, they are going to prevent storm systems from moving west to east across the United States. So a ridge of high pressure will end up locking in place over the eastern Midwest. We'll have temperatures way above average for this time of the year. 80s and lower 90s will be fairly common for several day periods, starting here not too much further down the road and lasting all the way into the first part of next week. A little further to the west, there's a frontal boundary trying to come into the western Corn Belt, and because of this persistent ridge in the eastern part of the country and also because of the hurricanes off the coast, the front can't move, and so it's going to stay in place. There's going to be some cold air in the western United States and western Canada as we go forward through the next 5 days or so. And that's going to create a fairly significant cold front, and it's going to be stuck in the plains in the western Corn Belt with no place to go because of the ridge and the hurricanes off to the east. So as a result of that, repetitive rain and thunderstorm activity will occur from West Texas all the way up through Kansas and into Minnesota. We're going to see multiple inches of rainfall this weekend into the first half of next week in much of that region. And the end result, of course, is going to be a little bit of a concern for immature crops in the upper Midwest. It's also going to be a concern for West Texas cotton country. But in hard red winter wheat country, these guys will be dancing in the streets because they will have a substantial increase in soil moisture to jump all over field work as we go into October.
And then in the eastern Corn Belt, I take it Texas keeps us warm, and maturation of crops should really come along.
That's exactly right. I looked at degree day accumulations just yesterday and noticed that we were behind a bit. It's probably most significant in the Great Lakes region, but a period of 5 to 7 days of temperatures way above average with limited rain, I think, would be absolutely perfect for a lot of these crops that are struggling with degree day accumulation.
Every day I talk to a meteorologist, and so far on South America, everybody has been in agreement that while the trade is concerned about dry weather, in particularly in Brazil, for the beginning of their planting season, the meteorologist are not. Are you in that camp?
I certainly am. The traditional rainy season in Brazil starts normally in the second half of October. And what's supposed to happen from mid-September into the first half of October is we get what we call pre-monsoonal showers, where the instability in the atmosphere starts to increase and some moisture does come in at low levels and it sets off some isolated to scattered shower and thunderstorm activity. Well, these farmers are in the fields, of course, in mid-September trying to get in that first crop and get an edge on their coal production for the year. And in a year that it is wetter than normal, they can really take full advantage of that by getting these early season shower and thunderstorms to increase soil moisture, and away they go. But this year, it's going to be a little bit more sluggish in getting started, so we're not going to see much precipitation until we get into the very last day or two of September and into early October. So these guys will be sidelined for a while, and that's got a few people a little concerned. But in reality, I think it'll all come out in the wash, and we'll do okay. It's just going to be in October before we get started.
Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this edition of the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois Tax School in East Peoria. I'm Todd Gleason.